Live Creative Now, episode 40.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast designed to help you live a full color life. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. And today I have a special bonus episode for you. Just today, as I'm recording this actually, on Wednesday, January 20th, I offered a free virtual online workshop called Born to Create: Why Your Creative Play is Essential, Not Self-Indulgent. And today I am sharing it with you on the podcast. I have edited out all the pauses and the technical issues and the massive throat clearing that happened once or twice. And I also edited out the long Q&A section at the end. So this is pure content here, and I think you're really going to like it. You might never see your creative pursuits in the same light again. This episode is sponsored by Creative Sandbox 101, the little mini course with a powerful punch that starts on Monday, January 25th. The shopping cart closes at 9 p.m. Pacific time on January 24th, and you can find out all about it at creativesandbox101.com. That's creativesandbox101.com. Let's get to today's episode. Welcome again to Born to Create: Why Your Creative Play is Essential, Not Self-Indulgent. And we are going to start right now with the writing prompt. I want you to think about, what is your idea of living a full color creative life? Not the cultural ideal of, I mean, there is no cultural ideal of a full color life. That's sort of my phrase, but which is why, one of the reasons why I use it. Not what your mom thinks would be the best life for you, but your idea of living a full color creative life. Type it in the text chat. What it means to you to live a full color creative life. And I will read them out. Oh, great. We got one already from Jacqueline. It means redefining what it means to be an artist, unleashing my creativity in unusual ways that doesn't restrict or limit me in any way. Oh, I love it. Beautiful. Thank you, Jacqueline or Jacqueline. I'm not sure which Jacqueline or Jacqueline you are. So don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. If I'm not, I apologize. Jean says, having a studio to create in. Oh, I like that. You know, Jean, that was a huge goal of mine for a really long time, because my first studio, when I was married, I did have a small bedroom that was my studio. But then when I got divorced and I was living on my own, my studio was my living room. There was no separation from between my living room and my studio. And my big goal was to have a studio that I could close the door on. It really made a huge difference. All right, let me read a few more of these. Artie says, happiness, more fulfilled, being able to have an outlet, doing good, but also sales. I like that. Wonderful. Melissa writes, finding inspiration in everything. Oh, I love that. Pat says, making the world around me more beautiful. I love that. Sunny says, exploring more and more and sharing it all. Nisi says, building on and stretching my talent. I always want to be there as well, Nisi, constantly stretching and growing and challenging myself. Carol says, painting almost every day, or drawing or writing. That is a huge one for me, getting something creative in every day. Angie says, engaging my imagination and creative spirit all the time, letting loose my inner child and loving every moment and everything I do. Woo! That is a great vision. These are all so wonderful. Gosh, I would love to read all of them out, but I'll do for people who are
listening to the recording is I will download the text chat so people can see what other people wrote, because these are just so beautiful. Melissa writes, making art a part of my daily life. Yes. Okay, I'll read one more. Patria. Hey, Patria. Patria is a Creative Sandbox member, as is Jenny and Cynthia, a bunch of Creative Sandbox members here. Boldly creating all the time in all spheres of my life, not caring what anyone else thinks of my choices, having courage to try new things because I am drawn to them, not because someone else thinks it's cool. Tapping into my most intuitive self-expression. Teresa writes, painting every day. At the moment, it's only weekends, and I have a studio. And I'm not sure if you mean you paint only on weekends and you do have a studio now, or you would like to paint every day and have a studio. That's part of your future vision. Ethel says, making art with joy and without stress. So these are so beautiful. These are so wonderful. And my question that it occurs to me to ask right now is, how, like, in a percentage, how close do you feel like you are to that vision of your full color creative life? Is it 100%? Is it 10%? Is it 33%? What, if you could pick a number between 1 and 10, go ahead and type that into the text chat. How close you feel to living a full color creative life right now in your life? Carol says at the moment, 110%. Woohoo! Jenny says 40%. Nisi, 87. Jean, 10%. We got a 7. We got a 1. 7 from Angie, 1 from Debbie, 41 from Katrina, 10 to 15 from Patria, 25 from Melissa. Ooh, all these numbers are going by. So they really range anywhere from 5 to 110%. Melissa writes, 10%. I've been struggling to find my passion again. Jacqueline says I recently increased from about 15% to 75%. So, wow, thanks for sharing. A lot of you are posting numbers less than 100%, which is pretty typical. And as you see in the text chat, you're not alone. Whatever number you posted, somebody else posted something pretty similar. So that always makes me feel better to know that I'm not alone. My personal idea of living a full color creative life is engaging in my creative pursuits, making time for the things that are important to me, working on projects that I choose, right, that are challenging and meaningful and exciting to me. That's my personal idea of living a full color creative life and living authentically. That's really, I feel like a full color creative life is so much about being authentic and living authentically. And I'm really happy to say that I am living a full color creative life now. But just 6 years ago, at the start of 2010, just that recently, oh my gosh, totally not the case. I would have put probably 0% if I were asked to rate at that time in my life, because I was totally burned out. I was not making art for me, art that fed my soul. And in fact, except for an annual art retreat that I go to with my calligraphy guild, the Friends of Calligraphy, every spring, I had not made any art for me for over a decade. And I really felt horrible about myself, like horrible. And the real irony was I was making a living from my art, but the only art that I was making was for clients. And at the time, making a living from my art, realized I felt like I was living the most uncreative life ever. And the scary thing was, even if I could have forced myself to get creating, I was so stuck because I had no idea what I wanted to make. None. And I was really living in a state of low-grade misery. I was walking around feeling like life was pretty gray. Now, if I go back further in my memory, I can remember being a really, really little girl, like nursery school. I actually just published a podcast episode and a blog post that talks about this. I actually have to go all the way back to nursery school, maybe kindergarten, where that's the time in my life where I can remember no separation between me and my creative spirit. We were like this, and it was all one, right? And you might have similar memories yourself. You might not remember that, but if you go back far enough, if your memory goes back far enough, you'll be able to remember that, because every single one of us came into the world zestful, curious, totally and fully creative, and with an inherent entitlement to create. Inherent. We were born with it. But the problem is, we live in a society that is really confused about creativity and about creative expression. And it gives us a lot of mixed messages. And that's the soup that we swim in all through our lives, is this soup of mixed messages about creativity. So for most of us, and the mixed messages, by the way, I mean, you know what a lot of them are, I'm sure, but we have the society that really puts on a pedestal our most famous creators, you know, the really famous, successful artists and filmmakers and musicians and writers. We look at them as like heroes, right? But then there's this big separation between those people and the rest of us. And those people are the ones who really get to do the thing. And the rest of us, the messages go, don't really get to do it. That's what I learned. That was the programming that I grew up with. And that's the programming that we're all swimming in that soup. So for most of us, that really close connection to our creative spirit, it gets broken down. And it gets broken down really early for a lot of us. I bet every single one of you here has a story about how you got disconnected from your creative spirit. There are a few people who managed to hang on to that sense of entitlement to create through childhood and into adulthood, but that's pretty rare. Those are the people who define themselves as artists all throughout. The rest of us, we knew we were artists when we were two. We didn't even think about it. There were no labels. We just did things because we loved to do them. But very, very young, we are programmed out of it. Sometimes it's parents or teachers who tell us that we're not good enough, right? Sometimes they even shame us in front of other people. According to Brené Brown's research, 85%, she's studied thousands of people, and 85% of the adults that she has studied in her research and had done interviews with can actually remember an incident from school of being so shamed that it forever changed how they thought about themselves. And half of those people, so over 40% of the population, at least the population that she interviewed, which is pretty diverse, over 40% were shamed around a creative act. Some of you probably remember shaming experiences yourself. And I also know people personally who were forbidden by their parents from engaging in any kind of creativity. Forbidden. And their parents were well-intentioned. They were trying to help them, you know, earn a good living or whatever. But, you know, it is no wonder that so many of us don't feel a sense of entitlement, permission to engage in creative expression pursuits. Not a big surprise. For me, it all started with what I call the comparison trap, which I didn't have a word for it. I didn't know what was going on, but it started so young. In kindergarten, I remember looking at other kids' drawings. I wrote about this on the blog post today and talk about it on the podcast. I had two friends, Laura and Mandy, and I remember this few days in kindergarten where they were drawing bunnies and chickies. I think it was near Easter. And I really liked these bunnies and chickies. I thought, wow, that's really cool. So I copied them and I started drawing bunnies and chickies too. And it was fun and we were all playing and it was a happy, happy memory. But first grade, I remember looking at Aaron Brody's drawings of race cars. Amazing, like so realistic for first grader drawings of race cars. Now, I had no idea, no desire to draw race cars. I didn't care about race cars. But I remember so clearly looking at his race cars and thinking, wow, he's really good at drawing. I'm not that good at drawing. He's better than I am. That must mean that I'm not good at this thing. That's how early it starts. It can start even earlier. That's when it started for me. And it just got worse and worse over the years. And I just kept comparing myself to other people, my work to other people's work. And guess what? it never measured up. So by the time I was in high school, I knew other people were the artists because they could draw better than me. They could draw really realistically. I had stopped drawing at age 13. So of course I didn't get any better at it. Duh. I know that now. Other people were the musicians because they could play whatever instrument better than I could play my instrument. And so I thought, well, they're the artists, they're the musicians, they're the creatives, therefore I am not. And so over time, I completely stopped doing a lot of the stuff that had been a huge source of joy for me. So tragic. Like, I can look back at it now and just feel like, oh, honey, you don't have to quit. It happened so unconsciously, though. And like I said, by the time I was in high school, that creative joy was just almost completely stripped out of my life. I stopped seeing art and music and all kinds of creative expressions. I stopped seeing them as something that was mine, that I got to do as my birthright, right? And instead, they belonged to other people. The good people, the true artists, right? This I call installing a glass ceiling over my head. Self-installed glass ceiling. I was stuck in this belief system about myself and about the world that other people were creative and I was not. And this is a really, really common experience. If you have had something similar happen to you, go ahead and type in the text chat, you know, just yes, or I get it, or I, you know, some, just so that I know that I'm not alone here. Jessica writes, I can recall being good enough at art in middle school that people pretended to be my friend to get drawings. That's what got me to the opposite side of the spectrum, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? It sets up this sort of dichotomy between the artists and the non-artists. And I had self-defined as a non-artist. So yeah, people, Nisi says, totally. Deborah, yes. Katrina, yes. Joanne, yes, I was told I didn't have any passion. Ouch, what a horrible thing to be told. Jean says, do we all compare ourselves to others? It's pretty universal. I mean, there may be some people out there who don't, but I have yet to meet somebody who hasn't done that. Cynthia, totally get it. Beth, yep, was told to study something in college that would earn a living. Clearly not a creative pursuit. Yes, so, so common. Carol says, that happened to my boyfriend, and I think it's such a waste. He's got such a great eye. This is what happens over and over and over and over again. My mother was told, mouth the words in the choir when she was in high school or something. She has pitch, but she was told to mouth the words. Like, she never wanted to sing in front of anybody ever again. Can you imagine? Jessica says, on the other hand, although she was encouraged in art, she says, I was shamed and steered away from wanting to write. Yes, this happens. So, so tragic. It really pisses me off. That should never happen to anybody. Makes me really upset. Pat says, I changed my major from art to business because others could draw faster than me in my classes. I got C's in drawing. See, like, grading art, grading creative expression is just inherently a wrong thing. It really pisses me off. All right, cool. So I'm going to move on. All of these beliefs that were programmed in are not our fault, but we incorporate them into our belief system. And so they become these self-installed glass ceilings, and they're almost impossible for us to see because we believe them to be truths, right? Here's an example of a belief system. You guys have all heard this one. This really strong belief in the culture that all artists are starving, right? That all artists have to be poor. That maybe they shouldn't even make any money. They should be poor, right? That is such a huge, huge belief system in our society. And, you know, except for the very lucky few who are the exceptions that prove the rule, right? There's this idea that it's impossible to make a living from your creativity. Now, this workshop is not about making a living from your creativity, but I bring it up because it's such a common self-installed glass ceiling. Because the reality is, the truth is that lots of artists and writers and other kinds of creatives are not starving, I've personally interviewed dozens of really thriving creatives for online courses that I've created. But that's not what we're shown in the culture. So the reality gets obscured by the myth of the starving artist, and the myth gets perpetuated. And that brings me to another really short writing prompt. First thing that comes into your head of a belief or a mindset that has gotten in your own way or that you've seen in the wider culture, like the starving artist myth, any negative belief about creativity or artists or other kinds of creatives, or about creative expression of any kind, any beliefs that serve to keep you or keep other people from doing what you might have the desire to do creatively. Go ahead and type in the text chat. And it might start with something like artists are, or creative people are, or creatives or artists always, blah, 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 blah. Jean says, I'm messy. that's a really common common belief system that creatives are messy. Melissa says that you have to stick to a certain style that really cripples you, your creativity. Jessica, you can't make a living that way. Yep, that's a big one. Ooh, Virginia. Oh, this is a powerful one. Creativity isn't worth paying well for because it comes naturally. And you know what I say to that? What I say to that is the thing that comes easiest to you and most naturally to you, that is your highest value offering to the world. It's a real paradigm shift, but it's true. Just because it comes easily to you does not mean it comes easily to others. It probably doesn't. So that makes it more valuable because it's not easy for them and it is easy for you. Ooh, Melissa writes, creatives are crazy. That's a big one. Chetna says creatives are ungrounded and unrealistic. Beth says writers are miserable, alcoholic, alone, depressed, etc. When I was young, she writes, I felt this necessary, or I wasn't really a writer if I wasn't depressed and alcoholic and alone. Yeah, you're not the only one. A lot of people. Kathy says, I devalue my work, and so I think others will too, and hence won't be able to make a living. Let's see. Oh, Artie says, this is a good one. I haven't seen this one before, but I know this one. She says, this came from my home. I must have my other work done before playing. Work, all caps, done before playing. And art is playing. Got to do everything else before I can possibly give myself my art, right? Yeah, that's really heavy. Virginia says, I sew for a living, but people don't want to pay much or anything for my skills because it's just sewing, you know, it's women's work. Yeah, damn, better watch out because I might get up on my feminist soapbox. Yeah. And isn't it interesting that the top creatives in any field that is women's work, like textiles and cooking, those are, you know, women's work, right? But the top creators in those fields, guess what? They're men. People take them seriously, right? And they take themselves more seriously than women tend to. Oh, Beth. Oh, this one hits me really hard. I have to have one creative pursuit and stick with that, or you're just a flake. No passion pluralism allowed. Yeah, that's a really big one. These are so great. So that is the fiction. All of these things that I've read out, that is the fiction. And it is no wonder that people stop doing their creative things, because who wants to be, you know, irresponsible, insane, suicidal, flaky, poor, selfish, unimportant, right? All of those negative beliefs. Who wants to be that? Why would we create? It's amazing anybody creates anything with all of those beliefs. So it's time for reality check. Reality check. Here is the truth for me personally. See if you resonate with this. Nothing makes me feel more alive. Nothing makes me feel more alive than doing my creative things. There are other things that also make me feel maybe equally as alive, but nothing makes me feel more alive than doing my creative things. Now, that is not a bad, selfish, unhealthy thing. And I suspect, because you're here in this class with me, I suspect that that might ring true for you as well. Here are some other truths. You guys probably know Brené Brown, super famous nowadays. This is one of her best known quotes. Unexpressed creativity is not benign. It metastasizes into grief, rage, judgment, sorrow, shame. It becomes destructive. Unexpressed creativity is not benign. And I can see this in my own life. If a day or two goes by when I'm not engaging in some creative expression at all, something, if I'm not creating in some way, I get cranky. And eventually, if too many days go by, I get depressed. It is a bad scene. And on the other hand, I notice that my entire day goes better when I started off with creating. My entire day goes better. I have more patience. I actually feel more productive. I feel more productive, not less. You might expect that if I do something self-indulgent, right, that I would feel less productive. It's the opposite. I feel more productive. And I want to hear in the text chat if you resonate with this, if you've noticed that either that unexpressed creativity comes out in negative ways in your life and or that expressing your creativity has a positive impact in your life. Now, Virginia says, I go nuts if I don't create for a few days. Jessica, I feel exactly that way. Melissa. Oh, here's another. Pam wrote something from previous when we were talking about the self-installed glass ceilings. This is a really good one. I have to create what the market dictates. Yeah. That is a really fast way to shut yourself down. That's one of the things that shut me down for a lot of big time. Kathy says yes to both. Totally, says Trisha. Virginia says it must increase our feel-good hormones. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, actually. Ethel says, yes, I get cranky. Yes, says Jenny. I was totally crabby and off today and had so much work to do, but I reminded myself I would feel better if I did the creative thing first. Jenny knows this because she's been studying with me. And of course I did. Yes. Fist bump to you, Jenny. Woohoo. Oh, and Pat typed in, even thinking about moving toward creativity gives me a boost of energy. That's huge. This is huge. So, and that's a perfect segue because I want to talk to you about scientific reasons for why this is true. It's science. It's neurobiology. A few years ago, I took a psychology class at Stanford University. It's very close to where I live. And they have this extension program. And there's the most popular class, actually, that has ever been taught on the Stanford campus is taught by this woman, Kelly McGonigal, who is the author of this fantastic book called The Willpower Instinct. Highly, highly, highly recommended. The class was called The Science of Willpower. And a little side note that's tangential is she wanted to call the book The Science of Willpower, but her editor's publisher said, oh no, people aren't interested in science, that will scare them off. So they titled it The Willpower Instinct. It would have made such a better title to be called The Science of Willpower. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. The class, The Science of Willpower, and basically the book is basically all of the studies that she shared in the class at the time that she wrote the book. And I took the class a year or two later. So there are even more studies that she shared with us. And all of the studies that she shared looked at self-control, willpower, what it is, why we need it, and what we can do to create more of it. And it turns out that willpower, our self-control, can be mapped to certain areas of the brain. It's here, the prefrontal cortex, the front part of our brain, which is the more like evolutionarily new part of our brain. When this part of the brain is functioning optimally, that is what allows you to stick with a task when part of you wants to do something else, right? And it's what allows you to say no to the temptation or the distraction, like no to the cookie if you're trying to eat healthy, or say no to diving into Facebook if you're trying to get work done. This part of the brain is what allows you to do that. And it's also what allows you to remember your long-term goals so that you're not acting on impulse all the time, like a lizard, controlled by your lizard brain, your old part of your brain, the amygdala. So this part of the brain, when it's functioning optimally, it enables us to do the things that our better selves really want us to do and not do the things that the lizard brain is telling us to do. And it turns out also that willpower is a lot like a muscle in that it can be strengthened just like you'd strengthen your bicep, and it can also be fatigued. For example, sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation actually interrupts the circuitry of your prefrontal cortex. So your brain literally cannot remember your long-term goals and what you really want. Same thing with stress. If you've ever been stressed out or you've ever been sleep deprived and you've noticed that, oh my God, it's so hard for me to stick with the things that I was planning to do today. I can't even remember what they are. This is why. It's neuroscience. Your brain literally cannot remember what you really want. And the very interesting thing is that any willpower challenge can fatigue your self-control. So for example, say you were at work and your boss is driving you crazy and said something nasty to you, and you really want to lash out and just like say, you pig-headed scumbag or whatever. But, and of course you're not going to do that because you don't want to lose your job, right? You have to use your self-control to hold your tongue. That use of your self-control, it's like that depletes it a little bit. Like that muscle is getting a little bit fatigued. So then when you come home, you're going to have a much harder time not snapping at your kids or not eating the cookie when you want to, you know, you really want us to eat the salad or whatever. You're going to have a really hard time sticking with doing your taxes when your lizard brain is saying, just go and dive into Facebook, because your willpower has been fatigued. When your willpower is fatigued, it's just like a muscle, it needs to be restored and refreshed. And you can do a lot of things to restore energy to that part of your brain, to your willpower, quote unquote, muscle. But what do you think is the most effective way? I'll tell you, it's not sitting in front of the television. It turns out, this is my favorite part of the Science of Willpower class, studies have shown that the most effective way to restore your willpower is to do something that interests you, that engages your interest, especially something that puts you into a flow state. You know, when you lose track of time and you're just fully, fully engaged and you're challenged kind of at the edge of your ability, guess what? Spending time on a creative pursuit is one of the most effective ways to enter into a flow state and to engage your interest and to restore energy to your brain. I cannot tell you how many times a friend or a client has said, you know, I'm just too tired and too depleted when I get home from work to do anything but just veg out in front of the TV. Because your lizard brain is saying, do the easy thing, do the easy thing, do the easy thing. Your lizard brain thinks that sitting in front of the TV is going to restore your energy. It is not. TV is a lousy way to restore energy to your brain, and surfing the internet. I don't have a television, but I do the internet social media dive thing when I'm tired or whatever. Doing your creative thing is way more restorative. It actually is restorative, unlike watching television. So in other words, when you do your creative thing, it reduces the effects of stress and it restores energy to your brain, to the part of your brain that you really want to be energized. And as Kelly McGonigal said in the Science of Willpower class, it is not self-indulgent to do something that restores your energy. It is never self-indulgent to do something that restores your energy. This is huge. If you are stuck on the notion that engaging in your creative pursuits is somehow self-indulgent, think again. Wrong. This is a really powerful reframe. It turns everything upside down. It is not self-indulgent to do something that restores your energy. And I'm going to see if the text chat has been going wild and I haven't been able to read it. Debbie says, I only realized it recently. Creating put me on another level of happiness. How can that be self-indulgent? Because when you're happy, you're bringing that energy everywhere you go. Every situation you encounter, every person you interact with is touched by happy, right? Woo, that ripples out. That's huge, 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 huge. And Sunny says, if I don't create, it's like I'm missing a very important nutrient. I crave it. Yeah. And your brain is craving it too. Jessica says, oh, that's amazing. I did not know creating had such a positive effect. Virginia says, wow. Kathy writes about the struggle. This describes my struggle to the T. And Virginia says, I have sleep disturbance problems. That explains a lot. Yeah, this one of my things I've been working on for the past year or two is really being intentional about trying to give myself more sleep. And it's made such a huge difference. It's been very challenging for me, but I finally managed to really build it in so much better. Gloria says, that is so empowering. Jessica says, I feel as though I've been taught that being happy is secondary to doing what is needed. Guess what? That's because you're human and you're female. We are all taught, most of us, few women are not somehow programmed that taking care of other people is more important than taking care of ourselves. And I always like to think about the airplane metaphor of you got to put your own oxygen mask on before you put everybody else's on. Otherwise, you're going to die of asphyxiation, right? Anyway, these are great comments. Beth says, I've just come to see a stressful relationship in my life as a self-installed distractor from my long-term goals, primarily creative work. Beth, fist bump for noticing that. That is huge, huge, huge. When you can notice things like that and then make self-compassionate decisions about what you want to change, boom, game over. That's what it's all about, baby. All right. I want to tell you a little bit more about my story because I think you might relate. So back in high school, I had this big old self-installed glass ceiling that was telling me that I wasn't an artist. I wasn't creative. And then my summer before my senior year in high school, when I was 16, I discovered dance. And I fell just madly in love with it, madly. And I immersed myself in dance. I was dancing every day. And it became my total passion. And it was going to be my career. And a few years later, I was studying at Juilliard. I was on my way. That was the year I turned 20. And boom, I developed this really vicious case of tendonitis in my ankles. And that was the end of my dance career. I didn't know it at the time. I spent 5 years on the quest for the miracle cure because I was so passionate about dance. I didn't care if I could never walk again as long as I could dance. That's a little insane, but it really felt like my calling. And losing it felt like a death. And in fact, my identity as a dancer really did die. So it was like a death. And I had to reinvent myself because I was so identified as a dancer. And I literally thought that was my one shot at passion. And, you know, I was in my early 20s and pretty dramatic. And I figured, well, I guess I have to live my rest of my life in shades of gray. And I remember thinking in those terms, you know, like, oh, poor me. But, you know, at least I had my one shot. How many people live their lives and they never find a passion, right? But then years later, much to my surprise and delight, I found myself falling madly in love with something else. With calligraphy, that became a total passion. And wow, I apparently didn't only get one. We get to have more than one. And in the years since then, I have found a number of different passions. That's why I call myself a passion pluralite. You don't just get one, you get to have more than one calling or passion. Same, different word, but basically the same thing. Just like we get to love many different people in our lives, we get to love many different pursuits as well. We get to have more than one. But there's a really confusing thing about callings or passions. One of the hallmarks of a calling, of a true calling, is very counterintuitive. It's a feeling of huge resistance, even wanting to run the other direction, right? Think of Jonah in the Bible. think of Moses in the Bible, these wonderful stories in the Bible. God himself came to them and said, hey, this is your calling. I, God, am telling you, go do this thing. And in both cases, bam, they ran in the opposite direction. And this is a really common archetype in literature. You'll see it everywhere because it's really true. The more important something is to you, the more resistance you are likely to feel. The more important something is to you, the more resistance you are likely to feel. It's very confusing. And sometimes we are told by well-meaning friends or family who are trying to be helpful that, you know, why don't you just quit painting or writing or whatever it is? Clearly, you just don't want it badly enough because after all, if you wanted it, if you really wanted it, you'd be doing it, right? Wrong. That is not true. The more important it is to you, the more likely you will resist it. And huge resistance is a classic hallmark of a calling. It isn't always there every single time, but it is a classic hallmark. And when you just know this, it can make such a big difference because now when you notice yourself avoiding your creative thing, oh, I think I'll go do the laundry first. I think I'm going to do this thing first, right? Whatever you're doing anything but your creative thing, instead of beating yourself up for it, which never helps, you can say, hey, I notice that I'm resisting this. I must really want it very, very badly. I'm just experiencing fear, right? That is what's keeping me. It doesn't even matter if you know what the fear is. I mean, it might be fear of failure. It might be, oh my God, I'm going to prove once and for all that I'm a hack, right? I have that one a lot. You might be afraid of success, great success that's going to totally turn your life upside down, whatever. It doesn't really matter what the actual fear is. Just knowing that resistance comes from great love, great desire, that's so, 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 so helpful. And if there's one thing you take away from today's class, it's that image of Jonah and Moses receiving the call from God and running in the other direction. That will hopefully help you remember that the more important something is to you, the more resistance you're going to feel. Melissa writes, yep, fear, LOL, number one resistance. Angie says, I am notoriously an avoid dancer, LOL, very cute. Yeah, bing, 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 says Angie, that's me. Yes, so people are resonating with this. Hopefully this image of Jonah and Moses running in the other direction will help you remember next time you notice yourself running in the other direction, resisting. Something very similar is going on with creative blocks also. So sometimes we know what we want to do and we run the other way out of just this resistance, right? But sometimes we feel really, really stuck. You don't know what you want to do. You don't know what to do next. Back in 1994, right after my wedding to my first husband, I decided that I was going to be a writer. But writing was hard. And when I didn't instantly write amazing masterpieces, I basically decided that I sucked. My gremlins were so loud telling me that I sucked at writing. And if I sucked, I should just quit. Why? If I suck at this thing, I shouldn't do it. So I quit. For 16 years, I did not write, except in my diary, you know, my journal, until I started my blog in 2010. 16 years. I mean, that's such a shame. But we tend to think that if it's hard, if we're blocked, and boy, was I massively blocked, we think that a block is a stop sign, right? That it's a message to quit. That's what I did. But as Greg Lavoie writes in his book, Callings, which I don't have to show you, but it's another wonderful book, Callings, Greg Lavoie, L-E-V-O-Y, blocks aren't blocks to creativity. They are the creativity. Let me explain what I mean. We think that the block is a stop sign, But if you have, I'm sure you can think back at a time in your life where you've experienced a block and you've somehow pushed through it. It's pushing through that block that is going to generate the answers or the ideas that you're looking for. My very first commission for a ketubah, a Jewish wedding contract, I quoted a price that seemed crazy high at the time, turned out to be ridiculously low for the amount of time I put into it, but that's another story. As soon as I got the job and sat down to start designing, I totally panicked. Oh my God, I have no idea how to do this. I was supposed to do a collage. That's what we'd agreed. I'd never done a collage since elementary school. I almost called the bride and sent them back their deposit check. That's how scared I was and how blocked I felt. Thankfully, I held to my commitment. I knew that was not going to be a good thing to do as this beginning, starting out taking commissions artist. So I just started. I just said, block or no block, I have to start somewhere. So I started, I made sketches and they were hard. I had to revise them a bazillion times. I went through tons of tracing paper. I had to calligraph their text multiple times because I didn't have the ability on my computer to copy fit it back then. I spent 70 hours on this piece. Anyway, I did end up making a ketubah. And it ended up being one of my most popular themes and designs that I have later turned into a print and I sold over and over and over again. I tell you this story because whenever I experience block now, I remind myself of that moment. This is part of my creative process. Every single time, whether I am working on a painting or a blog post or a new song or a class, a workshop like this, every single time there is a point where I feel like it's just a black hole. I'm reaching my hand into a black hole. I have no idea what I'm going to pull out or if I'm going to be sucked in, right? I now know to expect this. This is part of my creative process. So I can say, oh yeah, this is the part that really feels awful and sucks. And I will get through this. I just have to start. It is the doing, not thinking about it. It's the doing, getting my hands dirty. It's the doing that's going to show me what the painting wants to be. That's going to reveal what my blog post wants to be about or what my book wants to be about or what the class structure needs to be. It's the doing of it. It takes getting comfortable with discomfort because blocks are an inherent part of the creative process. We have to get comfortable with discomfort. Now, occasionally there are these wonderful moments where it feels like poof, instant download, right? There's the song. It just like wrote itself in 2 minutes. Boom. There's the blog post. It wrote itself in 2 minutes. The painting, whoosh, wow. I just whipped it out and it looks great. Occasionally it's effortless. And it is so wonderful when it's like that, but we cannot expect it to be like that all the time because that is not the usual mode for most of us. More often there is effort involved. And sometimes, maybe most of the time, it is not comfortable. So you've got to get comfortable with that discomfort. The more you get comfortable with it, the better off you'll be. And when you know that a creative block is not a block to creativity, that it's pushing through that block, that's the creativity. When you know this, you can start to see blocks as your friend. Now, they're still going to be uncomfortable. That never goes away, I'm sorry to tell you. But you can start to remember, oh yeah, this is that really uncomfortable, sticky, blocky part of my creative process. This is where it feels really yucky. This is the part where I want to quit. This is the part where I want to run screaming in the other direction. Does that remind you anything? Hallmark of a calling, remember? That is how you can start to make every creative block your friend. Kathy says, we need a plaque that says creative blocks are our friends. Yes. And Sunny says, yes, just jumping right in. Oh, Melissa, that's such a beautiful metaphor. She says it's the caterpillar becoming a butterfly. It has to go through darkness and push through it. And in fact, if a butterfly doesn't have to put a lot of effort into breaking out of its cocoon, its wings will never expand fully. It will be completely crippled and it will never be able to fly. It needs that hard pushing out of that cocoon in order to turn into a full butterfly, in order to live. That's such a great metaphor. And Gloria says, it's so difficult to start something new. It's a real struggle. Yes, it's a real struggle. You're not alone. Jacqueline says, it's the curse of being a creative genius, LOL. Yeah, it's so funny. So much of this stuff is so counterintuitive. Jessica says, this is exactly directly straight out of my Creative Sandbox Manifesto, Jessica. I found that sometimes I can throw the block off balance by just drawing or writing anything. I just start and go with something totally random. Going through the motions lodges the creativity out of that tight space where it's stuck. Yes, that is why I'm looking at my Creative Sandbox Manifesto poster right now. Rule number 5 on my Creative Sandbox Manifesto is, if you are stuck, just start anywhere. It doesn't matter where you start. That is what is going to get your creative taps flowing. You have to do something. You have to get your hands dirty. Angie says that Sark has said, when you have a creative blocks, build a castle. And Scott says, creative blocks are the building blocks of creation. Yes, exactly. So, so far, I have shared some really unexpected science, if you hadn't heard it before, at least, about how creative play affects the brain, namely that it restores energy to the part of your brain that is responsible for willpower and self-control. So doing something that restores energy to your brain is never self-indulgent. So doing your creative thing is never self-indulgent. It is restoring energy to your brain. It's giving you more patience to deal with people in your life. It's giving you the ability to stay on task with important things. It is so hugely important. And I've also talked about the truth about why you feel resistance to that thing that you love to do, and the fact that the more important something is to you, the more resistance you are probably going to feel. And in fact, running in the opposite direction or feeling that resistance is a really common but very counterintuitive hallmark of a calling. Think of Jonah and Moses. I also shared with you how you can make every creative block your friend by remembering that a block is not a block to creativity. It is creativity. It's pushing through the block that will get you to that magic zone, which we all want to be in. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for your fantastic, fabulous comments and insights and shares. Very open and vulnerable shares in the text chat. It means so much to me. It means so much to me that you came and you joined me live. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I can feel your energy coming through my computer monitor. Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day or night. Thank you for joining me, and I hope to see you inside the Creative Sandbox. Mwah. Bye, everybody. Go get creating.
That's it. That's a wrap. If this episode inspired you, then your next step might just be to join me in Creative Sandbox 101, which starts on Monday. This course has changed over 1,000 people's lives at this point, and it might just change yours. You can find out more and sign up at creativesandbox101.com. That's creativesandbox101.com. I hope to see you inside the Creative Sandbox. Thanks again for joining me, and until next time, go get creating. Mwah!
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.